right, welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. Now, there's a whole lot of stuff that's going on in the world right now, stuff that's extremely important, all right? And we're going to be focusing on a couple of the major questions that are out there right now that are keeping people up all night long. And these are the two conventions, the Republican and Democratic National Conventions, and the upcoming elections. And at the same time, we're going to be talking about the protests against police murder and terror that have happened all over the U.S. and that actually have played a role in setting the stage for what's going on outside and inside the conventions themselves. At the back end of the show, we're going to hear an excerpt from Revolution and Religion, The Fight for Emancipation and the Role of Religion, a dialogue between Cornel West and Bob Avakian. Now, this dialogue took place in late 2014 before a packed house in the Riverside Church in New York City. And both speakers address two important questions, questions that people have even more today. Is there no value to working to abolish the system while also voting to minimize the immediate damage it does? And if we avoid voting, how can we avoid the rise of the worst of the right? Cornel West is a prominent and provocative Democratic intellectual, and Bob Avakian is the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party. I think you're really going to find a lot to dig into. And before that, we're going to be talking with Carl Dix, a representative of the Revolutionary Communist Party and co-founder of the Stop Mass Incarceration Network. Carl was in Baton Rouge during all the protests following the police murder of Alton Sterling. And at the time of this interview, he had just arrived in Cleveland to be in the streets during the Republican convention. And opening the show up, I'm very pleased to be bringing you a very special couple of guests. These are two members of the Revolution Club, who, along with many other members of the Revolution Club, have traveled to Cleveland for the Republican National Convention and will be going to Philadelphia for the Democratic National Convention. And they're bringing a whole different set of politics to these conventions, politics of revolution. And we're going to be talking with them about what brought them there, what they're trying to accomplish, what they're saying to people, and why it's so damn important. So without any further ado, I want to welcome Rafa and Amina to the show. Rafa, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm good. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Okay. Right. Never ask me that again. Amina, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah? Well, you could have said, yeah, I hear you. Anyway, all right, let's jump into this. Rafa, we'll start with you. You're in Cleveland. What's going on? What's the Revolution Club doing in Cleveland?
Well, the Revolution Club is in Cleveland because the eyes of the world are going to be on Cleveland, you know, at a time when people are rising up against police terror of yet more unarmed black people killed by the police for the crime of being black in America, you know, at a time when, you know, like I said, the eyes of the world are going to be on Cleveland, you know, and humanity desperately needs a way out. You know, on the one hand, it's Western imperialism, and on the other hand, it's Islamic fundamentalist jihad, and humanity needs a whole other way. And the Revolution Club is coming into this situation to both conventions in Cleveland and Philadelphia with the message that we are organizing now to overthrow this system at the soonest possible time, bringing a message from the Central Committee of the Revolutionary Communist Party, preparing to lead an actual revolution to bring about a radically new and better society, the new socialist republic in North America. And we're really fighting to break out of the choice. So people need to break out of the choices that are dictated by this system. On the one hand, it's a fascist, white supremacist, misogynist pig like Donald Trump, someone that calls women dogs, someone that calls Mexican rapists. You know, this person is being upheld by this system. He's been elevated by powerful forces in the ruling class of this system. I mean, CNN, all these mainstream media treating him as yet another legitimate political candidate. What does that tell you? It tells you that this whole system is illegitimate. This whole system has no right to rule. These are the choices that they dictate. On the one hand, a fascist pig, and on the other, a proven war criminal. You know, Donald Trump said, you know, threatens more war on the world. Donald Trump says he's the candidate of law and order. But look at Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton claims she cares about the kids, but there's 500,000 Iraqi kids that were killed because of the sanctions that these Clintons put on the country of Iraq in the 1990s. Hillary Clinton called black youth super predators and said they need to be brought to heel. These are the choices that are being dictated by the system. What does that tell you? It tells you that this system has to be overthrown. And I want to say something about Donald Trump. You know, his slogan is Make America Great Again. We're going to be going right into these conventions with the message that America was never great. And asking people the question, was America great when they dragged Africans here in slave chains, when they kidnapped them and dragged them here through the Middle Passage, killing millions? Was America great when they committed genocide against the native peoples and stole the land, when they waged war against Mexico and stole half of Mexico, when they colonized the Philippines and Puerto Rico, when they dropped atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, killing hundreds of thousands of innocent men, women, and children? I mean, this country is rotten to the core all the way up to the present. 3 million dead in Vietnam. Napalm dropped on little children. All these crimes have been committed under Republicans and under Democrats. And the sooner people see that it's a system that's causing refugees and immigrants to be exploited and driven into horror and death. It's a system that's causing these wars. It's a system that's a capitalist system that's destroying the environment. It's a system that's locking down generations of black and brown youth, brutalizing and incarcerating them, or even blowing them away, or else setting them up to fight and kill each other when they should be fighting the real enemy. A system that conditions men to disrespect and brutalize women. And if that's what's at the root of it, the solution is an actual revolution, a revolution that defeats and dismantles this system's armed and forces of violent suppression at the soonest possible time. And there is a leader that we are bringing out at these conventions, Bob Avakian, the Karl Marx of our time, who's actually developed a strategy for how to make a revolution in this powerful but not all-powerful system that we're living in, and a vision of a radically different society that we could be living in, that's overcoming all of these inequalities, all of this oppression, but without turning out the light on critical thinking, on dissent, on artistic and intellectual ferment, you know? And we are calling on people, if you're feeling what we're saying, if you hear this message, if it moves you, if you are sick at heart, seeing what these pigs did to Alton Sterling and Philando Castile, because you know that this goes on every single day in this system. It's not a few bad apples. It's actually America. You know, if you feel in that message, get with the Revolution Club. Go to revcom.us. Come to Cleveland. Come to Philadelphia. Link up with our contingent. Go to revcom.us and read and follow what we're doing here.
All right. Amina, do you have something you want to speak to in this? Because, you know, one of the things that really strikes me is that, look, you have a situation now. You have a situation where you have a very complex stuff going on in the world. And people are faced with, you know, they're faced with this thing of, I mean, look, the constant assault on humanity from both sides. You know, you have this lunatic that drives up into a picnic or a party, you know, celebrating one of the holidays in France. You know, you have that happening. You have the stuff going on that's linked to this, generally overall linked to it in terms of what's happening in the Middle East. You have U.S. imperialism out there doing all this stuff. And people, you know, I get a sense that, you know, people are looking at things like they look at the list, the never-ending list. I mean, already up over well over 500 people that have been killed by the police. People are looking at the situation people are facing, and they're really struggling with, well, what the hell do I do in response to this? What do I do? And they look and they see this, then sometimes people get, you know, say, ain't nothing I can do. You know, I ain't going to go for Trump. They say, no, I don't like Clinton. Some people say, what choice do we have? You seem to be holding up, the club seems to be holding up a different choice. Let's talk about some of that, all right?
Yeah, I think I want to quote from the Central Committee of the Revolutionary Communist Party released 6 resolutions, I think at the beginning of the year. And just from the first revolution, it clearly states, look, where there is oppression, there will be resistance, right? But without the necessary scientific leadership, we're never going to have a chance to get free. There's a big gap, I think. There's a big hole missing in society where people could see the horrors, right? People see all everything that we're talking about, from the police brutality, everything that you described and everything that Ralph went into. I think a number of people kind of see that, right? But they actually don't think that anything else is possible, which I think is part of the point you're describing, right? Or if anything, the way that they get expressed, right, is through acting outrage in ways that actually are not in line with getting people free. And I think in the middle of this, more than anything, what people do need to know and what people do need to get into is this new synthesis of communism that B.A., Bob Avakian, has actually fought like all hell from coming out of the movements of the 60s and really through forging of a party and actually in going forward and really fought like hell to sum up, look, if these past revolutions were so great, what happened? And the essence of the matter is we lost. And so the question is, are we going to be able to actually not just fight a good fight, not just fight this or that outrage and oppression, but actually fight to put an end to the system once and for all? And I think that's the big struggle actually on the world, right? Is there going to be a scientific understanding of what's the problem, right? The system of imperialism, capitalist imperialist system, and what's the solution? And really, if there were any other way to go about it, we'd all be for it, but you know, this is a scientific assessment. The only way out of this is an actual revolution. And now the question is, how to wage that struggle today? How to go from small numbers of people to actually a growing movement for revolution. And at these times and at this moment, I do think the emphasis of everything that's coming together and really everything that's shaping up here in Cleveland in regards to this convention, and there is a lot of potential actually to break open some new ground, and not for revenge, but actually for getting humanity free. And I think this is a responsibility on everybody, everybody who hungers for a different world, everybody who's sick and tired of seeing video after video of police murder or all the horrific things that you describe, right, actually getting serious and getting organized with this revolution. And I do think there's a relationship. You know, look, the Revolution Club stands for two basic principles, right? Humanity needs revolution and communism, and fight the power and transform the people for revolution. There is a real need to actually act, and this is part of breaking out of the dynamics of how society functions and how we're told to actually voice our disagreement with the system by electing or by voting this or that politician, right? And everything that Raphael described in the sense of what are the choices being dictated by the system, right? And at this time, there's a lot in motion where a lot of people are just not happy with how the so-called democracy is shaping up, which in fact is a dictatorship. And there is a question about really people refusing, continuing to fight the power, continuing to fight all the outrages that drive people to want to see a different world, but actually not stopping at just fighting one fight, but actually fighting to put an end to this. And that's through an actual revolution. And that's what, I guess, not just gives us a strength, our pillar, but actually our fighting determination to really not have to live this way anymore and to lead others to actually get with the only way out of this horrific system that is completely unnecessary. But we got to actually make that revolution to get rid of it. So I'm hoping that speaks to your question.
And if it didn't, you'd be in trouble. Anyway, we have about 5 more minutes. And basically, I want to know that one thing, like people are looking at what's happening in Cleveland. And I don't think a lot of people know, you know, like right now that this is all put forward, even with the coronation of Trump as the candidate and stuff. And even with people, you know, seeing what kind of a fascist he is and what's going on behind it. There is a way that, as you guys have been speaking to, that this is all being used to prove the legitimacy of the system as the way to go. And you've been speaking to that. But there's also an element that comes out that a lot of people aren't aware of. What kind of preparations? I've read some in a lot number of places, including most recently at RevCom.us. The point about there's a lot of fascist repressive apparatus being put up in Cleveland. Tell people what's going on there, because it's the other side of what they're doing, right?
Yeah, there is. The FBI and the Cleveland police have been knocking on doors. They've been setting up a whole program of snitching and extreme repressive measures in terms of roadblock places that you can and can't go. At the same time as they're allowing basically white supremacists and Trump supporters to openly carry guns all throughout the Cleveland area. So it is a very repressive situation, but it's also, this country likes to go around the world saying it's the land of freedom and democracy, right? At the same time, you know, you see the images coming out of Baton Rouge. You see how they brought the tanks into Ferguson. You see what they're doing to repress the people here in Cleveland and in Philadelphia. Like, it just puts a lie to the fact that this is, that the essence of this society is that it's free and democratic. No, the essence is that this is a capitalist system with armed enforcers there to enforce that system. And the more that people can see that, the more they're going to understand, okay, actually, no, this system can't be reformed. It actually has to be overthrown. And we can't do that tomorrow, but we need to do it at the soonest possible time. And that means right now, building up the strength, building up the consciousness, getting people an understanding of the leadership for this revolution, and a force in this situation, an organized, disciplined force, the Revolution Club, with, you know, we have points of attention. We're going to be in the middle of this situation, unified, really representing an alternative to this madness. No, the choices are not Trump versus Hillary. The choices are, is this system going to keep on doing what it does to people, destroying lives here and all over the world, through mass incarceration, through his wars, through the destruction of the environment? We could go on and on and on. Is that system going to continue, or is a radical alternative going to break out of these choices that they dictate to us and fight for a whole different world?
All right, Amina, real quick, do you have anything you want to add to that?
I would just say that I do think part of what you're speaking to is they're powerful, they're actually not all that powerful, and they got a lot of problems going for them. That's the whole point of this system, is completely illegitimate, right? And I would encourage your listeners to actually go on to revcom.us. There's a Bob Avakian portal, which I think there's a lot of analysis and a lot of writing by BA that people should get into and dig into and step off them and follow that leadership. And then, you know, the overall site itself, Revolution Newspaper, is on there that is having ongoing analysis. There's an article on the Bernie Sanders question and all of the above. So I just want to emphasize that, revcom.us. This is a lifeline of the revolution, and I think that's how people can actually move today.
All right, and if people have
the revolution
and if people are, we're going to have to cut off right now because we're on a tight schedule. So, Amina, Raphael, right. Thank you very much for joining us today.
All right, thanks, Michael.
All right, take care now.
Bye.
Talk to you later. All right, that was Amina and Raphael from the Revolution Club, and they are currently in Cleveland, Ohio for the convention to be part of the struggle around that, against what's happening there, that whole fascist display and celebration, and bringing two people, as they were saying, a whole different future, a whole different alternative, a whole different possibility, something that people, that humanity absolutely needs, all right? We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned. All right, you got it. International Noise Conspiracy. And you know what? Let's take that serious. Let's all share our dreams, all right? Let's all share our dreams under a communist moon. Let's all share our dreams for a whole different world. All right, now, everybody has been having their eyes just wide open all the time with what's been developing in this country around police brutality, police murder, the continuing genocidal assault against black and brown people in this country. What's been happening, the murder of black people in just the last couple of weeks has been astounding. And more recently, the exoneration of yet another one of the cops that participated in the murder of Freddie Gray in Baltimore. It just keeps piling up and piling up and piling up. And on the other side, actually what's going on too is that there's a breakout happening. There's a breakout in terms of a movement that seems to be in the streets and developing across the country, and it's a very important movement. And here to talk with us about it is Carl Dix from the Revolutionary Communist Party and the co-founder with Cornell West of the Stop Mass Incarceration Network. Carl, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Michael. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to really get into some things with you here. What is your assessment? You've been in Baton Rouge since the murder first happened. You've been in Baton Rouge, right?
I've been in Baton Rouge right up to the start of the Republican National Convention. And I'm now in Cleveland for that convention, but I was in Baton Rouge right up to this point. And look, it is right in front of our faces and has been there for a couple years now that police are getting away with murder. And I say it's in front of our faces because a number of these murders have been videoed. They have been seen by people all across the country and around the world. And it really is a, what are you going to do now? Are you going to stand up and fight this? Or are you going to continue to suffer in silence? And for others, it's a question of, are you going to stand by while these murders are perpetrated? And one thing that has been very important about this recent round is that when these two horrific cases of murder captured on videotape hit the light of day, people hit the streets, not only in the areas where they happened, demanding justice for the people murdered by the police, but across the country, there was a real outpouring. And that was very, very important because that's one of the key things that's needed to deal with this continuing outrage of police murdering people, disproportionately murdering black and brown people, and getting exonerated even as their murderous deeds are put out in the light of day. It was very important that people stepped out. And even more important was the fact that in the face of attempts to really suppress the resistance, people continued to step out. because when the events happened in Dallas with the police being killed, there became a big thing of, well, now is not the time to protest the police. What needs to happen is people need to have sympathy for the police, and they need to come together with the police. And then on the, I was about to say fascist fringes, but fascism is no longer on the fringes of the American mainstream political spectrum, because the Republican Party is about to nominate a fascist and has a fascist gathering happening in Cleveland right now. So from the fascist side of things, there was even a thing of those people protesting against the police are responsible for what happened there in Dallas. And even you have voices like Rudolph Giuliani, I was about to say Adolf, and I can say Adolf given his fascist stance, Giuliani, says, well, the police have to come into black neighborhoods the way they do because black people are disposed to committing crime. And if black people would only teach their children to be respectful of the police wouldn't have to kill them. And see, he says that in the face of the reality that black parents have to sit their children down and have a talk with them, especially their male children, but many black parents have it with male and female children. And they have to tell them, here is what you have to do if you encounter a police officer. You have to say, yes, sir, no, sir. You have to keep your hands visible. You can't make sudden moves, because if you do that, there's a very good likelihood that that cop will kill you and then claim that you were a threat to their lives. And it's really heart-rending to hear of people talking about having to have that talk with their children. And it's even worse because a lot of the parents who are having that talk know that even if their child does everything right in that encounter with a law enforcement officer, they could still end up dead. They could still end up like Tamir Rice, like Rekia Boyd, like Ayanna Stanley Jones, and like many of the other victims of these killer cops. So this is all going on, and it is very, very important that people don't get swept out of the street, don't get forced to go back to suffering this in silence, but continue to stand up.
Let me ask you this, Carl. I think it's extremely important what you're saying. And I was thinking about this. It's documented every year, more than 1,000 people, and it's growing every year, more than 1,000 people killed by the police, the overwhelming majority of them, black or Latino, and especially black, mainly black people carry the largest burden in relation to this. And it's these people are murdered, and it keeps happening and keeps happening. And when you're talking about the movement not folding up and packing up and or fading away and the importance of understanding what's happening, there is a question, I think, that keeps coming up in people's minds. And it's a question that's really essential to be answered. And that is, why the hell does this keep happening?
Yeah, see, and that's a very big question, up quite a bit among people in Baton Rouge where we were. And look, it happens because there is a system that has its police out there as the frontline enforcers for this setup and the miserable conditions that it enforces on so many people. You know, because you look at it, and there are millions of youth, especially black and Latino youth growing up in the inner cities, that government economists say will never find a legitimate job, a legitimate way to survive and raise families. Now, they don't say this as step one in terms of coming up with some way to employ these people. They just say it as that's the reality. And then their plan to deal with that is more cops, more prisons to lock people up in, and then setting people against each other to kill themselves, even as the police brutalize and kill them. And this is not because some bad policy choices get made, but it's the very way this system works, because the factories that my generation worked in back in the day, the steel mills, the garment factories, the auto plants, have now been moved around the world in search of greater profit for a handful of imperialist exploiters. So that has left folks in the inner cities with nowhere to go in terms of employment opportunities. The education system has been wrecked, geared to fail our youth. funding that needs to go in that direction has gone in the direction of building more prisons, hiring more police, coming up with more militarized weaponry for the police. This is what's been going on. And in the face of that, there is no way out of this short of getting rid of that system, because it's the very way the system works. It's not a question of you got the wrong person on top of it, and if you could just get another person, if you could just get a more liberal Democrat, or if you could just get a black mayor or a black congressman or a black president, this problem would be taken care of, because people have done all of that, and still it continues to happen. And that's why, that's part of why, because this isn't the only horror the system brings down. I could have the same discussion with you about the assault that it brings down on women, what it's doing to our immigrant sisters and brothers, the wars for empire, the destruction of the environment of the very planet we live on. The very workings of this system are why these horrors continue to happen, seemingly without end, but they can be ended through revolution to overthrow this system. And that's why we in the Revolutionary Communist Party are organizing right now for an actual revolution.
Before we get into that, I want to ask you this, all right? Because it's something I heard you say recently, and I thought it was really important for people to understand. Coupled with what you've just been speaking about, why does it keep happening all this time? You made a point recently where you said that actually this terror, the terror of police attack on black people, is actually a spearhead of an overall genocide. And that's a fairly heavy statement to make, because it, one, tells the truth, I think, in a certain sense. If it lays it open, really rawly lays it open as to what the hell is going on. And it also poses something before people of leading to just what you're just saying. What do you do in the face of a genocide? Do you try to make nice with the genocidal killers? Do you try and hide behind a rock? Or what do you do? You know, and if this is a genocide, isn't there a need for a response that is real and not just appropriate, but real?
Yes, real and commensurate to the problem that you're up against. And I do not use that term at all lightly or loosely. We felt we had to dig in and come to understand, what does this represent? Is it genocidal or not? And we looked at it, and it's really what I was talking with you about the system and the way that it operates and what it has done, the conditions that it has put people in. And the definition of genocide is putting a grouping of people in whole or in part in conditions in which they could not survive and thrive as a people. And when you look at the conditions that this system has put black people in, with the jobs being sucked out of many black communities, with the educational system being wrecked, you are putting a people, large sections of a people, in conditions where the young generation's existence and thriving is called into question. People who have no legitimate way to survive and raise families, they're thriving is in question, and their surviving is even in question. If you have a legal system that disproportionately traps people up in its clutches and puts them in a cycle of going into and out of prison, and then once you come out of prison, you're then treated like less than a full human being in terms of employment opportunities, in terms of educational opportunities, even in terms of where you can live, with these one-strike laws that got passed under Bill Clinton's presidency, where people were being thrown out of public housing if one of their family members was convicted of a felony. All of this is putting people in a situation where they cannot survive and thrive. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about millions of people facing those conditions. It is genocidal, and we need to call it what it is and bring out to people what the actual problem we're up against is, what's the depth of what we're dealing with. And then once you see that, then it does become, are you going to deal with it, or are you going to avert your eyes and hope that if you don't acknowledge it, then maybe it won't hit you. Maybe you could ignore what it's doing to others, you know. And then you have the justifications that the authorities bring down, you know, the way in which they take one black person who survived and done well and then said, well, how come the rest of you all can't do that? Isn't it really your fault? and trying to turn that around. And then they get people, I mean, they had people like Bill Clinton pushing that back in the 1990s, but then they get people like Bill Cosby pushing it out there too. That's what people are up against, but there's a way in which this is being more driven home to people. Because I talked to people in Baton Rouge. We actually were out there with them at the police station, and there were all these police armed for war, military assault weapons, riot shields, armored personnel carriers, and people were right up in their faces. And then you had these responsible leaders, a local principal telling his high school students to go home, a coach telling the athletes on his team they shouldn't be out there, a local religious figure telling people to go home. And people didn't want to go home, but there was a question of, did they feel they had right on their side? And we came into that with a loudspeaker, and I spoke to the thing of this horror that we're dealing with, the murder of Alton Sterling, and all of the stories that many of you all have about how the police have done you and your loved ones wrong in ways similar, and in some cases even as bad as Alton Sterling's. This is the problem that we're dealing with, and it's rooted in the system. It's not what you did wrong. It's what the system is doing to you. And there is a way out, and that way out is through revolution, nothing less. And we are organizing for an actual revolution. And as part of that, people need to stand up and say no more. And then I started giving the mic to people and saying, well, you're here. What's your story? What do you think about this? And women begin to talk about the fear they have for their children, for their brothers, for their uncles, for their cousins, but also the determination they had to fight to stop this horror that has them so fearful. And that was really important. And I think part of it is people were seeing, you know, as I was talking about the police getting away with murder, I was also talking about mass incarceration. I was talking about the poisoning of the drinking water in Flint. And, you know, these were like basic people. These weren't activists, college students. There were some college students, but it was mainly people from the neighborhood where Alton Sterling lived and was killed. But they knew about all of this. And they knew that black people, they kind of felt in their bones that black people had it real hard. And it kind of opened some things up for them, for somebody to put all of that together and then take it to, here's the source, and there's a solution.
Yeah, extremely important, man. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Carl Dix from the Revolutionary Communist Party and a co-founder of the Stop Mass Incarceration Network. And we're talking about what's been going on in the country around the epidemic of police murder of black and brown people, particularly in particular some of the things that have been happening in Baton Rouge, where Carl has spent the last period of time. And he's currently in Cleveland attending the festivities outside of the Republican National Convention. And
just definitely outside. Yeah,
definitely, definitely. Right. Well, I'm sure nobody had any question about that. I just felt better say it. Anyway, I wanted to ask you this. As we're speaking about everything you've been talking about, and we talked, just mentioned this convention, and you were talking about the various people who come forward around this and who they put forward as solution make, as people who hold solutions. One of the biggest things put before the people generally in this country, but particularly before black people, was that now you got a black president, so there's some chance of actually some stuff. Listen, he can't be part of this thing that this guy Carl Dix is talking about. He can't be part of this whole sort of assault on black people that Carl Dix is talking about. And then you listen to Obama's speech. There were some very heavy things in that speech in terms of how polarized things are and how much, you know, he's trying to put it all back in the box. He's trying to put black people back to a point where he can say, see, it's all right, it's all right, I'm going to do okay. But he actually also has to acknowledge that this is an extremely serious, you know, development in terms of what's going on right now in relation to all the things that have been part of him being brought into office, you know, to actually put forward this idea that, well, now things are better. You've gotten a black president, and suddenly he's got to deal with the question of legitimacy. He's got to deal with the question of the center will not hold, all of these kinds of questions. Let's talk about your reaction to the speech.
I mean, the first thing is people need to get clear, and there is some growing clarity that putting a black person in the White House doesn't change how this system operates. And in fact, the system is what put the black person in the White House. It wasn't that black people mobilized and got him elected, or black people and Latinos and progressive white people mobilized and got him elected. The system put him there because there were broad sections of people, including black people, including Latinos, and many progressive people who were disaffected from the system. And there was an assessment that, particularly given the financial meltdown that happened leading into the 2008 election, that it was very important to do something to draw those people back into the system. And, I mean, let's be real, it worked. A lot of people got drawn into the system, but what they didn't realize was they were voting for the system. They weren't just voting for the first black president of the United States. They were voting for the system. And that president was going to preside over the attacks that the system needed to bring down. And that did mean record numbers of people deported, even though Obama campaigned on being friendly to immigrants. It did mean continuing the wars for empire, even though Obama talked about ending those wars. It meant that the assaults on the environment of the planet we live on continued, even though Obama talks about himself as the environmental president. And it meant continuing brutality and even murder launched at black people by the law enforcement and the whole criminal injustice system. So that's what all of that meant. And that's the role that he was supposed to play and initially was playing. But as things have developed, the vulnerability of this system has been brought to the fore because, again, it comes down to the very way that it works. It actually has to carry out these assaults against people. Once you pull the employment out of the inner cities, once you wreck the educational system, that means that people are going to be hit with unending attacks, and that opens up the possibility for them to reach the point where they're not going to take it anymore. And that's what's happening on the front of the police getting away with murder. But then if you think about the way in which that kind of concentrates one of the basic fault lines of this system, fault line being social issue, oppression that's coming down on a whole grouping of people that is part of what the country is founded on. And the oppression of black people has been something that was built into the fabric of America from the very beginning. You look at that, you look at the attacks on women, the continued attacks on the right to even choose to have an abortion, the violence against women, everything else that comes down, not only in this country, but around the world. That's another fault line around which resistance could break out. And when you look at the fraying of this, that's what Obama was trying to address. He was trying to address the fact that large numbers of black people joined by white people and people of different races and nationalities were in the streets protesting what's being done by the police to black people. He needs to try to calm that down. So he's acknowledging that there's a problem, but then he's trying to rope people back in by saying, okay, there is a problem, but we got some cops who were killed. We need to come together. He wants to bring the people who are upset about what the police are doing together with the police. And then he also wants to say, we've got a way to deal with this, but it's within the framework of the system. We've got what he calls best practices that could deal with this problem. Well, what are his best practices? Body cameras for the police. We've got body cameras on large numbers of police forces, and all that means is we get a video of the police brutalizing and murdering people. And then the criminal justice system ignores that video and exonerates the brutal murdering pigs. That's what body cameras have mean. What are his other best practices? He gets his commission together to talk about this problem. We've had commissions. We've had policy changes. We've had Justice Department investigations of police killings. And what that almost always comes down to is that the Justice Department stalls things out for a year or so and then says nothing we can do about it. But hopefully people have forgotten about the atrocity and moved on. So none of that is getting to the problem. His role was to try to rope people back in to this conciliation with the police. And one thing that I do have to say for people in Baton Rouge in particular, because that's where I was while this was going on, when that was raised off of the developments in Dallas, people's response was, you stop your police from killing us, and then come back and talk with us about stopping protesting what the police are doing. You know, like maybe we'll stop once they've stopped doing it. But since they haven't stopped doing it, there's no reason for us to stop protesting. And that was a very important response. But one last thing I want to say about Obama's speech, because during his, actually it was in several speeches that when he was talking about the situation after the events in Dallas, he said, we may not solve this problem in my lifetime. We may not even solve it in my children's lifetime, which is actually a way to say the cops are going to continue killing you forever. And you just have to put up with it. Well, we don't have to put up with it. Through revolution, we could end this problem. I mean, day one after the revolution, there will be no more pigs in the street shooting people down, because this country's police department will have been broken up once the system that has them out there as the frontline enforcers has been overthrown, and the new public security setup that would be, you know, ensuring the security of people will be made up of people who would sooner lose their own lives than kill or injure an innocent person. But it's going to take a revolution to get to the situation where we have a public security institution like that.
Let me ask you one more question, Carl. With all the things you were saying, there's another point that I thought actually it might be important to speak to, and that is that in this speech in particular, there was a defensive edge to this and a recognition of how serious, to a certain extent, things are, sometimes recognizing it more than actually the people themselves do. But the point that Obama kept arguing for, the legitimacy of the system and what it does, and he kept arguing against the idea that the center cannot hold anymore, that things weren't as bad as they might seem to people. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, see, that was actually very important, and people need to get what was being said there. Because the fact that he would even pose the center not holding, even though he said it is going to hold, but he had to actually talk about that and had to talk about the legitimacy of the system and that things aren't as bad as people are saying they are, is because this is something that really scares the you-know-what out of the people who run this system, the class that dictates to all the rest of us, the capitalist imperialist class. Because when you're talking about the police's use of violence against the people as being illegitimate, you're questioning the legitimacy of the whole setup, because that's a key part of any system. The people who enforce order have to have the right and a monopoly on the right to use violence to keep things under control. And if people begin to view that use of violence as illegitimate, then it raises the question of, is the whole system illegitimate? And that's what Obama was saying. Oh, no, the legitimacy isn't under contention. The center is going to hold. Don't worry about that. The fact that that's being raised reflects their fear and vulnerability over, is it going to hold? And in fact, the fact that the Republican Party is in the process of nominating a fascist says something else about legitimacy of the setup and whether that center could hold, or whether there's got to be a whole different way of keeping this system in effect, one that's much more open and naked about clamping down on people. And you see it in terms of the increased role of the police in more and more aspects of things, and calls for them to have more freedom to clamp down on people, laws passed in that direction, Patriot Acts, things like that. Then calls for, well, all Muslims have to register. Police need to be more aggressive in black neighborhoods, inner city neighborhoods. All of that is a reflection of the vulnerability of this system. And it also points to something else, and that is that right now, with this fascist thrust grouped in the Republican Party, the answer that's coming from people is, well, you got to get with the Democrats. And a lot of people, in fear of the horrific stuff that Trump is spouting, see this as, well, I guess we do have to go with the Democrats. But see, they're not really an answer to that, because they have no real answer to the problems that people are agonizing over and more people are beginning to act around. They have no answer because they represent the same system as the fascists grouped around Trump. and that system has no answer. That's why we are saying here at this convention and are going to say at the Democratic National Convention that we don't need to vote for this system. We need to overthrow this system. We need to get rid of it through revolution. And we're organizing right now for an actual revolution at the soonest possible time, and have the leadership in Babovakian to make that revolution and the strategic approach that's necessary to carry it out.
All right, Carl Dix, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on, and I really encourage your readers to go to the website revcom.us, especially right now because there are things breaking around the world and in the country on a daily basis, and we're updating that website on a daily basis, and we're going to be having coverage from the Republican and Democratic National Conventions every day of the convention. You know, day one has just finished up, and we're doing the coverage around it right now. So your listeners really need to go to that website every day.
All right, Carl. Thanks a lot, man.
All right.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you.
Take care. Bye. All right. We're not going to take a musical break this time, but instead we're going to just jump right into the next section because we don't have that much time. All right. And what you're going to be listening to is a piece taken from the dialogue between Babovakian and Cornel West back in November of 2014. And it's called Revolution and Religion, The Fight for Emancipation and the Role of Religion. And this particular segment of the dialogue is focused up around this question: is there a value to voting? Can voting stop fascism? And you can find out how to get the entire dialogue on two DVDs at revcom.us.
Someone asks, in response to voting, is there no value in working to abolish a system while participating to minimize the immediate damage it does at the same time? And then someone else asked, if we avoid voting because no candidate represents the left, how can we also avoid enabling the rise of the worst of the right?
No, I think Brother Vakin said it well when he said he's not against fighting for the right to vote. And under certain circumstances, voting might make a difference. He just doesn't want to trot out the illusion that somehow we can vote our way through fundamental social change. I think it was Emma Goldman who used to say, if voting would lead toward fundamental transformation, it would be illegal. So we're not against reform. We fight for reform. We're not seduced by the illusions of reform. That's all. Is that a characterization of what you were talking about?
Yeah, but I think there's another, yes, but I also think there's another point here, which is the logic of the vote of voting forgets one very basic fact, that in any kind of profound social change that's come about, it didn't come about by people playing by the rules and going along with the way things are. It went by people stepping outside of the way things are and refusing to go along with the rules. If you think about, for example, even some of the gains of the civil rights movement, the way things were in the South was, it wasn't just something people, you know, white people didn't want, that black people could go to a restaurant. It was against the law.
That's right.
The law said that you had to have segregation. So if you were gonna change that, you couldn't say, we have to abide by the law. You have to say, this law is an unjust law. We have to step outside and oppose that. And if you think about any kind of basic change that's been brought about, it's always happened. See, people say, you know, for example, now I gotta call his name, Michael Eric Dyson, you know, in the last presidential election said, well, you know, if you don't vote, then you aren't in the game. You know, the championship is the San Antonio Spurs and the Miami Heat. If you don't support one of those two teams, then you don't have it. You're not involved. You don't have a dog in the fight. The problem is, if the choices that they're giving us are the only way you can play the game, then that ought to tell us that we don't need to be playing this game. See, that's the first thing. And what we need to do, like people have always done whenever they've changed anything in any kind of fundamental way, is to step outside of the rules. Like, let's go back to right now, what's hanging in the air, the Michael Brown thing. How many times have you heard over and over again, well, we have to respect the process. We have to let the system play out. We have to let the system work. But this is the system working. The assassination of Michael Brown and so many others, thousands of others, that is the system working. And, you know, look, how many times going back, say, 50, 60, 70 years, were black people lynched in the South? And thousands of times. And how many times was any white person ever convicted of murdering them in that way? Now, you can come forward to the present time. People always say, well, you know, the police have such a dangerous job. You know, look, what about all the police that are killed by black people? Well, what about them? First of all, you can't hardly find any. You go and take the statistics for the number of police that have been killed over the last 30 years and put it up against the number of black youth and brown youth that have been killed by the police, and one of them will be like this and the other one will be like that. And then here's the other thing. If somebody black or brown does kill somebody in the police, how long are they gonna live? And if they live, how long is a grand jury gonna take, if it even goes to the grand jury, to indict them for murder? Mm. Take the list of the number of police that have ever been indicted and tried, let alone convicted, for killing one of these youth, and put it up against the number of youth who've been indicted and convicted and either executed or sent to life in prison for the few times that they have actually killed the police. So if this is the setup you're dealing with, and this goes back to elections, the problem with the elections is that the terms are always set by the powers that be, by the system itself, in a way that always makes the choices get worse and worse. So that what yesterday was something that you regarded as an outrage, tomorrow that becomes a compromise position, and the day after that it becomes the best thing you can hope for under this system and by voting. And this is what's wrong with the whole thing of voting. We have to go out and change the terms, not try to find the best we can within the term.
I think this raises an issue which in some ways is the elephant in the room now, which is very much like the Sinclair Lewis novel. You said what? Oh, you can't hear? What? I can't hear. Oh, hit him where it hit. Well, the economic boycott that we called for in New York just 2 weeks ago, to end stop and frisk and to have the resignation of Bratton. Yeah, economic boycott, yes. But what I was talking about was this, though. Whoever raised their voice like that, it sounds good. I think in beyond that, we have to come to terms with the fact that there is a real possibility that America could go outright fascist. Mm-hmm. We got to come to terms with that. And what that means is that when you have politicians who are bought off by big money, bought off by big banks, bought off by big corporations, so that the government itself is completely subsumed under the power of Wall Street and big corporations. And those voices that are raised to try to bring critique to bear are either demonized, character assassination, or literal assassination, America is then very much on the road to fascism. And, well, no. The very fact that we're having this dialogue here is in some sense a possibility of some people speaking their minds. I'm talking about when just to raise your very voice, my dear sister, means you shut down like a dog. We can call it soft fascism versus hard fascism. Okay. So by raising voices, by still having possibility of social movements, even though it's penetrated by the FBI, that's soft fascism, then you got thick fascism. But I don't want to play with the word fascism because many of us have had to deal with much more harder fascism where we couldn't raise our voices at all. You see? But I'm just saying that because when you look at the three dominant tendencies of neoliberal capitalism, which is financialized, privatized, and militarized, and the financializing with wealth at the top, you're privatizing public education, public life, public prisons across the board, and then you militarize them, beginning with the schools and the airports, let alone the bombs in 890 military units around the world with a ship in every ocean. That is the American empire at the moment. At the moment. And to the degree to which the very possibilities of public spaces where certain voices, let alone certain movements, can still be enacted. Because believe me, under fascism, the Revolutionary Communist Party would not exist at all.
Well,
we
wouldn't be here, sitting here.
Well, we would be underground and in a serious way. That might be the case that there's a whole lot of folks underground. But I mean, the point is that I'm just talking about that's one of the elephants in the room in regard to what the challenges are.
Well, I agree. And I think the point, once again, is that there's only one way that's going to be prevented, and that's the same way that everything else we're talking about is going to happen. It's people rising up and refusing to go along with it and winning more and more people. Look, we have to go. When we talk about transforming the people, we're talking about, it's not some mystical process. We're talking about transforming the thinking of people, large numbers of people, how people understand the reality out here, what their values are based on that, how they see going about things in the world, what they think is important, how they see the possibility of living a different way, and how they see going about fighting for that. But this is the key thing we have to do. We can't just have a good dialogue, and believe me, I'm enjoying it very much. And it's very important, and we need to do a lot more of this. You and me need to do more of this, and other people need to do more of this. We need to be, our agreements, our disagreements, we need to be wrestling with them. Right. We need to find the unity as broadly as we can, and we need to keep talking about and arguing about our disagreements in a principled and lofty way. But at the same time, we can't just come to a thing and feel good for ourselves. This is not about us. This is not about the people here just unto ourselves.
That's right.
This is about what kind of world we're going to have and what we're really willing to do to actually fight to bring that world into being and to live in a way that's consistent with that and to bring into being a world that we can give to our children and their children that's much different and much better than this world. So we have to go out of here. That's why I said, and I was very serious. I'm not playing here. If they don't bring down an indictment against the murderer of Michael Brown, that is a test for all of us, and that is a test for this society and the people in it. What kind of society are we going to live in? What kind? It's not the only one. There are many tests, but it's one right in front of us right now.
Okay.
And if we're going to prevent, look, if the rulers of this country think that they have to throw off their democratic mask and go to what you're calling thick fascism, go to outright dictatorial rule without any pretense of allowing for the will of the people and rights and protests and so on. If they come to a consensus, maybe through a lot of struggle in their own ranks, but if they come to a consensus that that's what they need, they're going to move in that way, and nothing will stop them but us. And the millions and millions of people who are like us or who are not like us but need to be one to understand the world the way that we're coming to understand it.
All right, real quick, that was Bob Avakian and Cornel West, and it was a segment taken from the dialogue Revolution and Religion, the Fight for Emancipation and the Role of Religion. Really be interested in hearing from people on that, all right? I want to thank everybody involved in the production of this show, my guests and my staff and everyone else. And if you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. And we're going to go out now with a little bit of music from Dr. John called Revolution.